From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty with the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, October 8th, 2019.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org. And Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens, presenting Gardens Aglow, where visitors will see the gardens in a whole new light. Tickets available at mainegardens.org.
Maine Republicans held a counter-impeachment rally outside of Democratic Congressman Jared Golden's Lewiston office this morning, urging him to show more support for President Trump. Patrick Kraft was among several dozen who attended the rally. He says Democrats refuse to accept Trump as president.
I'm opposed to the witch hunt, you know, that has been going on since our president has been elected, you know, from day one, literally day one. And I haven't seen a crime yet.
A group that supports impeaching President Trump held an opposing rally across the street. Golden has not taken a stance on impeachment, but has said he supports the investigation. Adrian Bennett, a former TV reporter who served as Governor Paul LePage's spokeswoman, has entered the race in Maine's 2nd Congressional District. Mal Leary has more.
She describes herself as a pro-life conservative, a strong supporter of President Trump, and of Second Amendment gun rights. Bennett has just filed with the Federal Election Commission and is starting to raise money.
Money is something that we need in campaigns. And while I am not a firm believer that money is going to be the sole indicator if somebody is going to win, if you have the biggest bank account, I don't necessarily believe that. But I do think it's important.
Important, Bennett says, in getting her message out. She faces former State Senator Eric Brakey and former State Representative Dale Crafts in the 2020 Republican primary. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
Fire Chief Terry Bell, who was injured in a propane explosion that leveled a building in Farmington, has been released from the hospital. Bell's brother was killed. And the Maine Principals Association says it is reviewing whether there's a way for a high school athlete to compete with a wheelchair at the cross-country state meet. That's after the MPA came under fire for telling Levitt High School sophomore Jonathan Schumacher that he can't compete. In weather tonight, clear and cold with lows in the 30s to the mid-40s. Tomorrow, sunny with highs in the mid-50s to the low 60s. And on Thursday, mostly sunny central and north. In the south, overcast with a chance of showers west and south of Portland. As the impeachment inquiry into President Donald Trump slogs forward, Maine Republican U.S. Senator Susan Collins faces a big dilemma again. She's facing a potentially brutal reelection campaign in a state that split its support between Trump and Democrat Hillary Clinton in 2016. And as Steve Missler reports, Collins may soon have to choose between her reputation as a centrist and her political identity as a Republican.
Maine's high-profile politicians often go to the Grand Parade at the Freiburg Fair, but many of them skipped the event this year. That includes Senator Susan Collins, who is still on the mind of voters like Ron Richardson, a registered Republican from Corinna.
No, she needs to go. We need new blood, you know, new ideas.
Richardson says he's voted for Collins in each of her three previous re-election bids. Landslide victories, often attributed to her independent streak. Richardson also voted for Trump in 2016, but he says he won't next year.
I think he's a crook, to be honest with you. I believe that's going to come out sooner or later, that he really does these things they're accusing him of. Would I vote for him again today? No.
Further down the racetrack, Larry Tangway of Windham, an independent, says he too has grown wary of the president's daily drama.
But it's sickening. Every day you watch the news and that's all they talk about. It's the first thing you see, you know.
Tangway did not support Trump in 2016, but he says he has voted for Collins before because she's bucked her party from time to time. He says impeaching Trump is a true test of political courage, one that could change how he views Collins if she doesn't pass it.
Maybe it's time for change, you know? But I've got to see what the rest of the year brings here and doing this impeachment thing. And
Collins has been in this position before. She was in the Senate in 1999 during then-President Bill Clinton's impeachment trial. And she broke with fellow Republicans to vote against convicting Clinton. Collins also hasn't been afraid of criticizing Trump, like she did in this interview with PBS NewsHour before the 2016 election.
And it was that conclusion that has led me to believe that he lacks the temperament, the judgment, the knowledge, and the self-restraint to be our next president.
But Collins has generally moderated her criticism since Trump's election, although Monday she did condemn his announcement that he was pulling back troops from Syria. And in an interview with Maine Public Radio over the weekend, she said Trump should not have asked Ukraine and China to investigate his political rival, Joe Biden.
That is clearly wrong. It is inappropriate. I would agree with Mitt Romney's word of it's appalling.
Collins also chastised the president for saying last week that the whistleblower at the center of the impeachment inquiry is a spy who should be punished for treason.
For the president to denigrate and essentially threaten the whistleblower in this case discourages others from coming forward.
Collins's criticism quickly became national news as political observers look for potential defections in the GOP-controlled Senate that may ultimately have to vote to remove the president from office. It's unclear if her remarks provided any solace to the Democrats and independents already angry because of controversial votes she's taken during the Trump presidency, but her criticism was almost certainly not well received by people like Jenny Foster, who stopped by the Maine Republican Party tent at the Freiburg Fair.
She needs to really side with the Republicans. Don't go middle, don't go the other side, you know, because I consider that being a traitor.
Foster from Buxton is wearing a sweatshirt that says Trump 2020, make liberals cry again. Her mother, Lorraine Sturgis of Standish, doesn't don the Trump paraphernalia, but she's also a supporter. She whips out her phone to display a Facebook feed loaded with assorted memes and posts supportive of the president.
I really would like her to vote straight Republican. If she don't, we're going to lose this country. We're going to lose it to the socialists.
Sturgis says she'd consider supporting another Republican if Collins votes against the president on impeachment, a comment illustrating, once again, that the senator's reelection chances could be tied to the fortunes of a president she never voted for. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
First District Congresswoman Shelley Pingree was the first member of Maine's congressional delegation to call for an impeachment inquiry of President Trump. She spoke with Maine Public Radio's Mal Leary about the impeachment process and what effect it might have on all the other work that is before Congress.
Long before many folks were saying they were supporting an inquiry or an investigation, whichever word you want to use, you were advocating for an investigation.
Well, I thought, based on the Mueller report, we had a lot of material to investigate. There have been so many questions raised about this particular president. But right now, it is so concrete and easy for the American public to understand that he was, you know, contacting a foreign government to assist him in taking down an opponent in his own presidential campaign. I think this is completely clear. I think the inquiry, the investigation that's going on needs to move forward. And then if there's enough, you know, concrete evidence there, it has to come before the House.
Do you think they should look beyond just Ukraine and China comments to go back to the Mueller report, which, of course, is when you first called for an impeachment investigation?
Well, I respect the wisdom of these committees to go where it leads them. But I think that what we're seeing right now and the, you know, threads coming off of that are going to keep them quite busy and just finding enough evidence to make sure that all of this is proven beyond any shred of a doubt is the most important mission they're on right now.
Any doubt in your mind that there will be an impeachment vote here at some point with articles of impeachment that are coming forth from these committees that have their investigations underway?
Well, given what we know now and that the president himself turned over the, the report of the call, that we've had at least one whistleblower come forward with very credible information, according to, you know, many sources, it seems likely there will be an impeachment vote and there will be articles of impeachment. But I will, you know, I will not know until I see what the committees bring back. And they're certainly working hard to try to get that information now.
Some folks say you've already made up your mind to support impeachment. Is that a fair assessment, or are you going to wait until you see all of the actual charges that come forth from the committees?
I feel pretty strongly, based on what we've already learned from the president, that there's very likely going to be impeachment vote, that these things are going to be corroborated, and that I will vote for it.
When you look at what is that going to do to the ability of Congress to do its other work, because if it goes to a trial in the Senate, if you think you haven't gotten any action in the Senate so far, just based on the inquiry going on, are you going to get anything done if they're in a trial in January?
Oh, no. It will be very discouraging, because it will take up, it will distract the Senate even further. Look, if I didn't think it was absolutely necessary to move forward on this, you know, for the good of the work of Congress, I wouldn't want to be doing this. I think many, many members of the House have been extremely reluctant to go down this road, because we don't want to be distracted by this. We want to keep doing our work. But let's just say what we know of what the president has done is so egregious, it's our responsibility to uphold the rule of law. And I think, you know, we have to. It's what America expects out of us. So I don't want to be in this position. I'm not feeling, you know, I'm feeling very discouraged. And I think it's extremely upsetting that a president would do this, but you can't just let it go.
In talking with your counterpart from the Senate, Senator Collins, she's saying if the timelines match the way Speaker Pelosi is saying, a vote by Thanksgiving, that's going to come right up against the 21st deadline for passing a budget. And she's saying, I don't think it's going to get done, because from her experience with the Clinton impeachment, it took all the wind out of anything else and was totally focused, both the House and Senate, on the question of impeachment.
Well, what's interesting is the House has been conducting these committee hearings and investigations and doing our other work. We can walk and chew gum at the same time, even. You know, I passed a bill on ocean acidification through the House. Last week we had our marijuana and banking bill. So we've had a lot of activity going on in the House. I mean, truthfully, this is all blocked in the Senate. We finished our appropriations bills. We've sent everything over to them. I think there are something like 200 pieces of legislation that Leader McConnell won't take up. And that is really where the problem lies over there. I do agree these things can become a distraction. But the Senate seems to have been distracted and only focusing on judicial nominations since we started in January.
Congresswoman Pingree, thanks for stopping by and discussing impeachment with us.
Absolutely. Nice to see you.
And that's Maine Public's Mal Leary, who spoke with 1st District Congresswoman Shelley Pingree. This year, there is a new crop being harvested in Maine alongside the apples, pumpkins, and corn, hemp. Recent changes in how the federal government regulates the once-forbidden plant, coupled with the rising popularity of medicinal products made from its flowers, have fueled a boom in hemp farming. But as Jennifer Mitchell reports, today's growers and researchers are working to find the way forward for a crop that was all but lost to decades of prohibition.
This is the first time I've touched a hemp plant.
Ed Charbonneau is standing in a field of shaggy green plants topped with sticky flowers that sparkle with a coat of tiny crystals. The air around this field in Whitefield is heavy with a musky odor of mature hemp buds. Charbonneau is cutting branches and even digging up a plant by the roots to take back with him to his home state of Florida.
My wife has chronic arthritis. It's pretty debilitating. They're not finding cures for arthritis very quickly. And when you're a senior, you don't have that much time. Time on earth is limited. This is sort of the last resort.
As a senior and a veteran, Charbonneau represents a key demographic that experts say is fueling a new demand for expanded hemp acreage. According to state regulators, potentially 90% or more of all the hemp being grown across the country are varieties rich in cannabinoids, or CBD. That's a complement of non-psychoactive substances present in the cannabis sativa plant and prized for purported medicinal benefits in treating various complaints.
So the price on that at $25 a pound is $325.
Sheepscott General Store and Farm in Whitefield is one of 172 hemp-growing operations in Maine that have emerged since passage of the initial pilot provisions of the 2014 U.S. Farm Bill. The number of growers this year has more than doubled over last year since further expansions were put into the 2018 Farm Bill. And according to state regulators, land in production has grown from about a third of an acre in 2014 to more than 1,700 acres today.
It took quite a bit of convincing to get us to jump on the bandwagon because
we were worried about the stigma of cannabis affecting our general store business.
Farm owners Ben and Taryn Marcus are first-time growers. With very little in the way of hemp marketing or processing infrastructure, they're trying to see if a pick-your-own model, which they use each spring with their strawberries, will work here. With only a tiny handful of U-Pick hemp operations in the world, the Marcuses are essentially testing something new in a new industry. Well, hemp isn't actually a new crop. Generations of Americans grew the plant on a large scale dating back to colonial times. But Ben Marcus says much of the knowledge of what to grow, where to grow, and how to grow it has been lost.
A big downside for the hemp world is that we've lost a lot of genetics in the last 80 years. So there weren't any universities that were even allowed to maintain the seed bank. So we lost all these genetics. So now there's these geneticists out there that are collecting specimens out of the ditches in Nebraska and Iowa.
One of the researchers rushing to catch up is John Jemison, an agronomist with the University of Maine Cooperative Extension.
First of all, you know, it's very rare in an agronomic person's career that you get a brand new crop that all of a sudden comes on the scene. That in itself is fascinating, right? It's an unusual plant. We know some about what we need to do to grow it.
But not enough, says Jemison, to be able to advise the industry with best practices on soil and pest management, ideal spacing of plants, types of strains to use, when to harvest, and how to lower costs. Other challenges include ensuring proper plant gender. All the plants for a CBD crop must be female, and any gender confusion or inappropriate pollination could put the whole crop at risk. Even indoor versus outdoor growing is untested. Currently, the general guidelines used for cannabis crops have been designed for other species, such as hops or canola.
I wish we could have put the horse before the cart and done all the legwork, really known what it was supposed to do, and then been able to teach farmers this is what you need to do to grow it.
Some of the challenges facing this new crop, says Jemison, will be more familiar to other producers. For example, a lack of processing infrastructure to handle any sizable wholesale harvest, as well as a fragmented supply chain. And there's still even some general confusion over what hemp is in the first place.
Hemp and marijuana are both cannabis sativa, the same species.
State horticulturalist Gary Fish, who oversees the state's hemp program, says he still finds that many town councils, police departments, and the general public don't understand the difference, and that can have a chilling effect on a fledgling industry. While the same species of plant, hemp is a different strain, bred for its other attributes, such as fiber for rope or for its CBD, and contains almost none of the THC present in its psychoactive sibling, marijuana.
And I usually explain it in terms of dogs. So dogs are all the same species, but you've got little tiny wiener dogs and you've got Great Danes.
Whether hemp is the wiener dog or the Great Dane, it's also not completely clear who is in charge of the kennel. Currently, hemp growing is not legal in some states that have no state hemp oversight. Well, in Maine, regulators are awaiting guidance and rules from the U.S. Department of Agriculture on growing hemp as a crop. After that, the state plans to conduct a public comment period, likely this winter, as it reassesses its own hemp program. Meanwhile, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration is busy writing its own rules and guidelines on products made from hemp, such as CBD tinctures, vapes, and topicals.
You want to throw that on a scale?
That would be.
And you have to figure out how to keep it frozen. On the way to Indiana.
We have a freezer.
Perfect.
Sure. Back in Whitefield, the state's first ever U-Pick hemp harvest has drawn scores of people, many of them from out of state. Ben and Taryn Marcus are hopeful, but they say many challenges remain.
We have not broken even yet. I think there's a lot of assumption that, oh, they're going to get rich, but we have a lot of overhead into this crop. I don't think doing the U-pick alone is going to cover our overhead. We're going to have to do some wholesale. We're not sure yet if it is actually going to be lucrative or if it's even something we're going to do next year. We're kind of wait and see at this point.
The potential of this plant, I think, is we're just scratching the surface, and I don't understand why CBD is what brought it back to the legal realm. I hope that the other industries sort of come on board and that we can redevelop that infrastructure in this country. I think it could be great for our economy, it could be great for the environment, and it could be really great for farmers.
For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell.
Let me get you started.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org and join us tomorrow on Maine Calling at 1 o'clock for a look at the surge in hemp farming in Maine. I'm Nora Flaherty.